It's 8:25 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, last month, the Park City Council approved a nearly $100,000 contract with a New York consulting firm to serve as an art and culture consultant. Tomorrow, the city will host a community conversation about the progress of the Arts and Culture District Initiative in partnership with the Kimball Arts Center and Sundance Institute. It happens from 5 to 6:30 at the Doubletree Hotel. Joining me now in the studio with more details, I have Duncan Webb. He's the founder of Webb Management Services, along with the project manager, Nate Rockwood. Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
So, Duncan, let's just start with you, and maybe you can tell us and our listeners about what you do and why you were the unanimous selection by the selection committee here.
Right. Well, I am a management consultant to people who build and operate cultural facilities. I've spent the last 30 years roaming around mostly North America, advising cities, developers, arts organizations, and schools on building, fixing, and running cultural spaces, theaters, amphitheaters, community art centers, all sorts of spaces.
Yeah. So why your focus on arts and culture? I mean, just...
It was a long, strange journey to this, but basically I have a background in business with degrees in economics and an MBA, but I had a parallel life in the theater, first as a terrible actor, but later as a producer and a presenter. And I, way back in the 80s when I was still living in Toronto, I started advising experimental theater companies on how to sort of organize themselves and move forward. And I love this idea that as a business-trained person, I could impact the creative process. And that sort of drew me into this world of advising in this sector.
So as you mentioned, it's not your first rodeo. You've done this, I think, like some 200 projects all over the country and world.
Well, in fact, we're about to hit our 20th anniversary from my practice, and this is Project 396.
So closer to 400. Okay. Right. So maybe you could just talk a little bit about the process.
Right. So it's all about process. So this idea of coming into a community and telling people what to do is very tricky. I'm not from Park City and I don't live here. So we have to be very careful and intentional in the way that we go about doing this. The basic steps are to establish the case to do something by looking at four issues. Number one, who is the potential audience for a facility? So who lives here full-time and part-time, who visits here, who works here, what do they like, what do they want? And do we believe that there is propensity and capacity in the market to do more cultural stuff? Will they get up off the couch or down off the ski hill to participate? Secondly, what's the level and nature of demand on the part of artists and arts organizations who need and want facilities to do what they do? So we need to work with them to understand what spaces they have and what spaces don't work, when additional spaces are needed, and realistically, what are the spaces that they could succeed in? The third issue is then, what's the current supply of facilities? And if we think of that as an inventory, what are the deficiencies and gaps that we could fill with another project? So that's fairly straightforward. Quantitative analysis, two kinds of demand, audience and user, against supply. But then the fourth issue is we need to figure out where Park City is as a community and where it wants to go, and then think about how a project like this supports those broader community goals. How does it help you as a community drive economic development or enhance the quality of life for people who live here or improve the attractiveness to visitors? So we need to sort out what's important to your community and then think about what kind of a project helps you achieve those broader goals.
Yeah, something you did not mention, sustainability and traffic, those are two of Park City's priorities, at least
right.
The City Council's priorities. So how does all of that mix in here and combine with this project?
Well, it is important, those issues of... It's hard to talk about traffic and sort of sustainability yet. That comes a little bit later in the process because our first job is to come up with a concept and then see if it fits what the community can and should do, if we can respond to that project in terms of traffic issues and environmental and financial sustainability.
Now, why is the Park City project something you were interested in particularly?
We've done a lot of work in resort communities over the years, and I always find them intriguing there's always this tension about full-time residents, seasonal residents, and visitors, and trying to figure out who a project serves, and can it serve all of those groups? But can you, really more importantly, can you find the right balance in a project that helps the community move forward as a whole community, not just, you know, picking one group to help versus another group?
And you, in terms of the parameters you've working with, do you have those identified at this point, other than just the size of the space?
Well, so we're just a few weeks in. So what we're doing is sort of building a long list of possibilities. And this project is also unique because it's not about a building, it's a district. There's this site, 5.2 acres, and we have a couple of anchor tenants with the Kimball and Sundance who are interested in building facilities on this site. So our job is partly we might have some influence over what they do in their pieces, but it's more about what else do you do there? So what else do you do with – what other indoor facilities do you add? What outdoor facilities do you add? And then how do you tie it all together as a district that has an identity and that supports the rest of the community? So, for example, you already have an arts district along historic Main Street. So what can we do that is sort of complements that as opposed to competes with it?
Yeah, can you give me some examples of work you've done that have created very successful art and culture districts?
Sure. So I guess the closest best example would be work we did a few years ago in Breckenridge, where they have this great downtown arts district where they moved some historic structures in and they fixed some other ones up, and then they created a way to sort of physically connect that to some other performing arts facilities and built an identity of a district.
Now, interesting, because they just won some kind of award. I think I remember doing some story on it.
Yeah, and the old buildings they've restored are fabulous. So.
Yeah. You had mentioned in your proposal that the space would exceed the available property. What do you mean
by
that?
Well, my first reaction when I got here was, and in hearing all the people talk about all the possibilities, that it may well be that we've got more ideas than we can fit, right? So there will be an exercise of trying to determine what's most important, what we should try and do here versus trying to find some other place to do something else.
So as you've mentioned, you have met with lots of other folks, including the Sundance Institute and the Kimball Arts Center. What have they told you? I mean,
so they have their own plans going for buildings. They're still fairly loose, and I think we have the ability to influence them a little bit. They are proving so far to be sort of good listeners, good collaborators, good partners. We've been meeting with them every time we're here as a group as well as individually, because I think that they recognize that this is a very complicated puzzle that has to come together, and they might have to adjust what they're doing in order to make the whole project work. So far, I'm excited about their willingness to do that.
Yeah. We've kind of heard tentatively that both the Kimball and Sundance Institute would have perhaps theaters within their space. Some talk already about, I mean, how many theater spaces does Park City really need?
Yeah, I can guarantee that this will be the most contentious issue around this is the theater. You know, how many, how big, what form, what functionality, what flexibility. So that's a really important part of this, because you have, you know, the Eccles Theater here now. You've got the Egyptian, is that right? You have the great theater at the library. So we don't want to hurt those other buildings, and we need to figure out if other performance spaces are needed, how they fit in that inventory. And they can be different not just in terms of their capacity, but they can be different in terms of what they do well, how flexible they are, and how accessible they are to the community.
So you've also then been meeting with all these other art and culture groups?
Yes. So when we were here 2 weeks ago, we did a round of about 60 interviews, mostly one-on-ones, confidential interviews, getting people to sort of share their perspective on all these questions.
So how long does it take your company then to do all of this?
Well, usually it's a few months. We're moving a little quicker here because January gets very busy in Park City, so we want to try and get a certain amount of work done before then. So we're moving quickly to try and at least come back with preliminary ideas to help everyone sort of advance this project.
Okay. Nate, you hope to be in the ground next spring? Is that realistic or no?
I think that we hope to be in the ground in spring of 2019. So we have a little bit more time. So we kind of want to highlight that we are kind of going really quickly through the concept design, but that we'll have lots of time to work on the actual design, and we'll take a lot of community input and really run that through the typical process that we do with that. So we're going quick with the intention of going slow and making sure we do it right.
So tomorrow's meeting again, 5 to 6:30 at the Doubletree, the Yarrow. Tell us what's going to happen there.
So Jack Thomas will be there, and we'll kind of introduce the concept and explain why we feel that this is an important project. I'll be able to go through the timeline of this concept phase and then also what we anticipate the design phase and kind of lay out that timeline when different public input will be taken, and how we'll work with that input and provide feedback to the community. And then really we're going to, you know, turn a lot of it over to Duncan to kind of explain how these things work and explain the process. And then we'll do sort of an exercise of getting people involved and putting ideas out there.
So there will be an opportunity then for public input?
Yeah, the primary goal of this meeting is really to listen and to take that input in. Give some background so that we can get some good, meaningful input.
Yeah, and the idea is to hold a series of community open houses.
Yeah, so we'll have this one. Duncan will be back at the end of November, and we'll do another community open house at that time, and we'll just continue to have open houses and different forms for public input through the concept phase and then also through the design phase as well.
All right. So have we closed on the property? I know that you got the financing in order.
Well, the bonds are for the most part in order. They've been kind of put out to the market, so they'll sell in 2 weeks. And the property is still online to close in January.
So. Okay. All right. Anything else you guys want to mention about it? Just show up?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, important to show up.
All right. Well, we'll talk back. We'll talk with you again, Duncan, when you return in November. All right. Appreciate your time this morning. It's Duncan Webb and Nate Rockwood with the Park City Arts and Culture District. KPCW News Time now, 8:43. Good morning. Well, the fourth annual ski waxing event will be held this Saturday to benefit the Wasatch Nordic Ski Academy. In the studio with details, I have Carrie Morgan, and you've brought a couple of skiers as well, Carrie?
I have. I have Sarah Morgan with me and Logan Chamberlain on our team. We are going to be hosting our fourth annual waxing fundraiser this Saturday. It's going to be in front of Storm Cycles at Kimball Junction, and we'll be waxing Nordic skis, skate, and classic from 9 o'clock in the morning until 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay. So maybe you guys can tell me a little bit about what the Wasatch Nordic Ski Academy is. Is this one of the YSA teams?
We are not. We are an independent team. We have been a team for about 12 years now in the Park City area, and just a very small Nordic ski racing team. Logan, do you want to tell us a little bit more about your team?
Sure. The Wasatch Nordic Ski Academy, we're a fairly small team with very individual coaching. All the athletes, the vast majority of the athletes on our team attend the winter sports school. So we have the winters off, so we can train and ski full time. Yeah.
So you're one of how many kids on the?
This year we have 9 kids on the team.
Okay, yeah, it's small, yeah.
It is very small. Last year we were a bigger team. We've had some kids move on to college and finish their gap years and such. So, yeah, and that's what we love about this team. It's very, very personalized, very small team. Works great for us.
Okay, so Morgan, maybe you can just talk a little bit about how this works. I mean, I bring a pair of skis, drop it off, and wait, or do I come back, or?
Yeah, so how it's worked in the past and how we'll do it this year is where you drop off your skis, and then we will put them in a line, and we'll wax them, and then any time from opening until 2 o'clock-ish when we end the fundraiser, you can just come and pick them up, and it usually a backup usually doesn't end up happening. So and once you come, you can just grab your skis right away.
Okay. Takes how long to get a pair of skis done?
It depends on the ski, but it usually takes about 5 minutes per set of skis, so pretty quick.
Okay. Yeah. And then what kind of wax are you guys putting on?
We're just putting on a basic base wax, probably blue or red mix, and nothing too fancy, but anything that can match conditions for normal beginning of winter snow.
So a big part of the job is probably just cleaning off the clister from our
yeah.
the really sticky stuff from last spring.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the dirt. So what's the, it's a donation because it's a fundraiser. What's the average donation?
The average cost of, if you go into a shop and have your skis waxed, it's usually around $20. So, we started out doing this. We just wanted to get the kids out there and help the community out. I'll tell you what, these kids produce fast skis. They are in charge of waxing all of their own skis throughout the season. They know how to produce some really good fast skis, so you want these kids waxing your skis. But good practice for them, great service for the community, but it's also a great way to do some fundraising for us because that is one thing that is very, very expensive for our team is the wax. When it comes to race time, we spend a lot of money on these waxes. So suggested donation is around $20. People are always welcome to do a little less or a little more. I did want to say a huge thank you to Park City Roasters. Park City Coffee Roasters is offering that if you bring your skis in, they will offer a free half-price drink. So that's a great opportunity to drop your skis off, go in, check out all the latest and greatest at Storm Cycles and grab a cup of coffee or a nice pastry from Park City Coffee Roasters. So we really appreciate them helping us out with this.
Yeah, so in addition to buying wax, I mean, what else is the money used for? Kids are on their own for the coaching costs and traveling?
Yeah, we really try and keep our fees low. We have very, very low training fees. That's set as per our head coach, Bill Hokanson. Definitely other costs are travel fees, but truly the waxing, every year that we've done this, the amount of money that we raised is just a small portion of what we spend in wax. So yeah. It's a huge help.
So in terms of competitions that you guys would be headed towards this upcoming winter, I mean, some big ones or?
Yeah, we have three qualifiers for junior nationals and junior nationals and senior nationals are definitely the biggest races we'll probably attend this year. And junior nationals is actually here in Heber. And senior nationals is in Alaska. So those will probably be the biggest races. And then we'll race probably every other weekend, either local races or traveling to states just close by.
Yeah. And where do you work out? I mean, do you try all Soldier Hollow?
Yeah, we do a lot of our training at Soldier Hollow and White Pine Touring and Round Valley if we can. But definitely the majority of it is out at Soldier Hollow.
Okay. And then in terms of just, people have different, do you ski both classic and skate, all of the athletes, or do you just focus on one?
Yeah, generally a race weekend will consist of one classic race and one skate race because they really want athletes to be able to ski all of the different disciplines and be able to do everything. Most athletes will prefer one discipline over the other, but most skiers will be able to do both.
Yeah, and then different lengths, some more sprinters as opposed to the long distance. Yeah, so what do you focus on, Logan?
I'm primarily a distance racer. Sarah here is more of a sprint racer.
Yeah. Yeah, and we prefer one over the other, but we end up always doing both, so you kind of just have to get used to doing both.
Okay. Again, an opportunity to get your skis cleaned and waxed and help out the folks at the Wasatch Nordic Ski Academy. Anything else you wanted to mention?
That's about it. We're just excited. 17 days and counting until we leave for West Yellowstone to start our first on-snow training camp. So can't wait to get this season started.
They got snow in West Yellowstone already?
I see snowflakes in the forecast.
Great.
So fingers crossed.
Okay. Good luck to you two.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
KPCW News Time now, 8:51. Good morning. Well, four young ski racers are on the national training group, all on the verge of making it to the next level of ski racing. But to do that, they need the money to train and compete. Two of those, I have Jumi Krupka and local Andrew Miller. They join me now in the studio to tell us more about how they hope to do that. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Yeah, so Andrew, you grew up here. You started on the farm team. I know you raced your way up on the Park City ski team. So yeah. Tell me, what is the National Training Group? Is it something that the U.S. ski team does or something you formed yourself?
Yeah, so the National Training Group is a group that the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Association created for younger development athletes to kind of get into the program. So they're not necessarily named to the team, but they're part of the program and they train with the coaches, and so they have the opportunity to get exposed to that environment. And so hopefully that breeds us for success in the future.
All right. So you have access to the Center of Excellence then?
Yes.
Yeah. But that's about where the support ends?
No, we're actually we train full-time with the U.S. ski team. So our coaches are U.S. ski team coaches, and some of our teammates are full-on U.S. ski team athletes. So we actually do get quite a bit of support. It's just kind of the name that we don't get.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Jimmy. You're from Vermont. What brought you to Park City?
Ski racing did. So I came to Park City to train in the Center of Excellence with the U.S. ski team. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's two other guys that are part of the training.
Yeah.
And tell me a little bit about them. Just locals or also from out of state? Or
Ben Ritchie, one of our teammates, is also from Waitsfield, Vermont. And he's not here right now because he's younger and he's still finishing up high school. So he joins us when he can.
Great. And then the fourth kid is who?
The fourth kid is Luke Winters, and he is from Gresham, Oregon, and he skied out of Mount Hood. And he is a little bit older. He's 20 years old, and he is just driving out to Colorado right now, so that's why he couldn't be with us right now.
Okay, so you've got this ongoing fundraiser. Tell me how that works.
Yeah, we have an ongoing fundraiser online, and it's with a platform called Rally Me. So you can go to rallyme.com, or you can go to our website, which is www.usskiteamntg.com. And there's a donate button there, and there's a blog, and you can follow our journey.
So did you set that up or did the ski team set that up for you?
We all set it up together.
Oh, okay. And then the money that you raise, what is that used for?
It goes directly to our team fees. So we have to pay, we each have to pay $25,000 this year in team fees. So that pays for coaching and the places we stay and the places we train.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's an expensive venture.
Yeah, and that doesn't include plane tickets and miscellaneous, like, food purchases and, like, while we're on the road and stuff like that. So it's extremely expensive, so we appreciate all the support we can get.
Okay, so tell me, both of you have been accepted into Dartmouth, but you've what? Just taking a gap year, Andrew?
Yes.
And so what does that mean?
So we both got into the school, but we deferred a year to have the opportunity to solely focus on skiing. And it's been awesome. It's been really good. I mean, putting 100% of our time and effort and just becoming the best we can, it's been a lot of fun. So hopefully that turns out well.
And the same for you, Jimmy, just taking a year off just to, I mean, is the idea is to, I've heard people that do this is to lower their FIS points,
right?
So that when you get on to the Dartmouth ski team, you've both, I guess, qualified for the ski team there.
Yes.
Yeah. So the idea with the gap year is kind of to see what we can do with the U.S. ski team. And some people end up taking 2, 3, 4 gap years. And if their ski racing career really starts taking off, and then trying to fit in a couple terms at school here and there.
All right. So where do you head from here? I mean, would you qualify to go to Solden? Or, I mean,
Really, anything could happen in ski racing. So you never know. We could have a good race and end up in a World Cup this season. But the goal is 4 years from now, the Olympics, hopefully.
Okay, so that's not feasible for this upcoming Olympic Games. I mean, there are races that you would be competing in that would qualify you, or no?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely feasible. We signed up, like, we're eligible to compete, absolutely. I just think that, I mean, you never know. As he said, if we ski really fast, then we could end up there. So, but yeah, realistically speaking, I think 4 years is our goal.
Okay. So. All right. So what's your specialty?
Speed giant or? Slalom.
Okay.
Yeah.
Technical events. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then how about you, Jimmy?
It kind of changes day to day. And I say it's one thing and then it turns out to be another. So
yeah,
I never really know. I don't like to pin it down.
Yeah. You guys been on snow then down in the Southern Hemisphere? And
yeah. So we spent 3 months or 3 weeks, in New Zealand in August, which was amazing. And then we came home, trained, and then headed out to Chile, spent another 2 weeks out there, and then came back here, and then spent more time in the gym. And then we were headed out to Colorado this morning and going to train there for our final two-week block before races start.
Okay. And where are the first races held?
Copper, Colorado.
Okay. All right. Well, good luck to you. Again, what's the website? People are interested in helping you out.
It's usskiteamntg.com.
Okay. Good luck to you. Thanks
Thank
for
you
coming
very much.
In.
Thanks for having us.